the VCA Voice podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marie Curl. Our goal with the VCA Voice is to showcase how VCA Animal Hospitals is taking care of the future of veterinary medicine. We'll bring our purpose to life through meaningful conversations about care, our culture, and the communities we serve. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome Hannah Johnson. Hannah has completed a Master's of Social Work and is our first hospital-based social worker at VCA Aurora Animal Hospital in Illinois. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, Dr. Curl. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. I think I'm going to start off with asking you a little bit about you and your career progression and how it came about that you've joined VCA.
Yeah, absolutely. So originally, when I was a very young child, I wanted to become a veterinarian, but unfortunately was persuaded otherwise that I shouldn't pursue it, which looking back on that, I should not have listened to that individual. However, I knew I wanted to help individuals. This is what my passion in life is, for helping others. So I thought maybe nursing would be a great fit for me. Turns out that blood, gore, and everything else involved in that is not my forte. I can see it, but I cannot be involved in it. So that quickly was nixed off my list there. So social work is a great avenue that I was able to pursue to be able to be present in the medical field, but not have to have that direct hands-on with everything and still be able to support everybody in similar ways. So basically, I started off in human hospital setting, doing discharge planning in a hospital. That was lovely, but it was very not as connected as I wanted to be to patients and staff. Transitioned over to outpatient dialysis, which I absolutely adored. And it's quite similar, I would say, in my own perspective to the veterinary field, working with grief and loss. So that was a great transition into veterinary medicine that I am here today.
Excellent. Tell me a little bit about Aurora.
Yeah, absolutely. So here at Aurora, we have a pretty large hospital, I think close to 200 associates. We have quite a few specialties here, our 24-hour ER. So a lot going on, but I was used to that pace coming from human medicine. So I had heard from other veterinary social workers that sometimes it's a scary transition for some people. There's some connotations with social work and we can't read your mind. We can't do anything of that nature. So I've heard some veterinary social workers have staff running away from them. They don't want to be involved. And I had the exact opposite experience here, thank goodness, and running towards me with open arms. And it's been a fabulous experience to be able to assist associates here and clients and kind of make the team very cohesive here and supporting each other.
Were you aware that there was a field in veterinary social work before you saw the job advertisement for this, or was this a total surprise?
Complete surprise. I received an email stating that this job posting was available. I read through it and I was like, is this a dream? Because this combines all of my passions professionally and personally. I joked with my husband about it and he said, go for it. You should do it. And I did it on a whim and here I am. It's just been honestly a dream to be able to have this profession coincide with what I went to school for. I think it's more prevalent in the South, but I'm very happy to see that it's spreading throughout the country, obviously, as we now have 7 social workers within our largest hospitals in VCA.
Tell me a little bit more about something that you've been pleasantly surprised and has been a really good thing. And are there any aspects of the position that have been more difficult?
So the biggest thing that I've noticed here at Aurora, and I think it's probably throughout veterinary medicine, is the empathy and compassion that individuals in this field have. It's really not comparable to human healthcare. Just one general example would be in human healthcare, I never once saw a physician writing a condolence card to family after they lost a loved one.
Wow.
And here that's standard practice. Every single person in each department writes out that condolence letter because I think that shows how connected we all are to not only the patients, but also the clients. That's honestly been one of my biggest positives, I think, in this role, is seeing that. But I think it's also our Achilles heel in this profession, is that we wear our heart on our sleeve. And everybody is so compassionate that sometimes we forget to show ourselves that same level of compassion and empathy. So definitely working on that with my associates and making sure that they're valuing themselves and taking care of themselves the same way that they would their patients and their clients.
Do you think that that compassion has something to do with the greater experience of mental health risks for veterinarians and technicians and people in the veterinary industry?
Yeah, I definitely think that is part of what is going on. I think we could probably spend an entire podcast just on that question alone, because so many factors compound each other. Yeah. That is a huge aspect that I have seen here. And I think empathy weaves itself into everything in veterinary medicine. Another large aspect that I've seen that weighs heavy on our staff is the financial implications that clients have to face. And that's not what we see in human medicine. We don't present a bill. And unfortunately, that is the realistic perspective of what we have here, that clients sometimes are not able to afford certain procedures. And that's really hard for our staff to know that something could have been done, but financially wasn't feasible. And in the same sense, we have owners that have financial means to do everything, even though it's probably not the kindest decision to make. So that's just as hard for our staff to watch animals that could be put to peace. And we keep going because that's what the client wants, and we're honoring their wishes.
Both amazing points. And they're both certainly difficult aspects of veterinary medicine that in my patient and family interactions is in, with the human medical system, that some of those discussions just really never come up. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the VCA in-hospital social worker pilot that's going on.
So our program now has evolved to 7 social workers officially, which is very incredible, impressive. If you look over the past year, almost year and a half that I've been here, that we've grown it 7 times over. And I think it shows that VCA is caring and taking care of the future of veterinary medicine, as we have a phenomenal health and well-being team and different resources available, but making that presence in the hospital just brings that personable factor and being able to educate our associates on the resources that they have available here to them and making sure that they're supported individually. I think it's made a big difference for them.
How often do you communicate with the other social workers around the VCA family? And are there similarities with your roles and are there differences?
So we have meetings at least twice a week with all the social workers here on our team, which is phenomenal. So we're never truly alone in that, even though in each hospital, we are definitely spread apart throughout the country. And we're always available to support one another if something comes up on a whim. There are differences. Obviously, each hospital has differences regarding everything that goes on in the hospital, for being honest. And it is interesting to hear that as we speak, like how do we call stats at our hospital compared to the hospital at West LA or over on the East Coast? Everything is just slightly different. And I think being able to share that, we're able to kind of help evolve our hospitals into providing the best care that we can.
What percentage of your time do you feel like is really spent working with clients and patients more specifically versus with our associates in the hospital?
That's a great question. It's definitely evolved as I've been here. When I first started, we were at the tail end of curbside. So there were no clients in the building. I was lurking outside the building trying to get client interactions. It was quite the scene to be out in the parking lot and trying not to scare people off as this individual that's just trying to support everybody. But it was really helpful in order to build that rapport with staff, to have those connections with the clients. Mm-hmm. And within, I'd say, 3 to 4 months, I was having a complete turn in having the associates come to me for personal support and professional support. So at this point, I would say it's pretty evenly split, maybe 60-40, with clients having the 60%. But it typically does evolve into reflecting back on our associates as we go through a difficult case and making sure that they're supported and processing everything afterwards.
What does that client support look like? Is it one-on-one or do you work with groups of people? Tell me a little bit more about that.
So it varies based on what the client's needs are. Typically, it is one-on-one, but obviously we do have some individuals that come in with an entire family, whether that's cultural or religious beliefs, or this very supportive family. So working that with them in an entire group setting is very helpful for them. But typically it is one-on-one, whether that's in the exam room, prior or after euthanasia. I do a lot of follow-up calls and making sure that resources are sent out via email and that I'm available for them in any way possible, whether that's before, after, or during their visit here to our hospital.
That's so incredibly important. It's a difficult time. I've worked with a lot of clients who have never made the decision to euthanize a pet or even lost a pet from natural causes. And I think until you go through that as a pet owner and pet lover, it's hard to understand that level of grief that comes with that moment in time.
Yes, I often tell our clients and our staff here to don't disenfranchise the grief that you're going through. It's oftentimes harder for us than some of our human family member losses because we're with them for longer periods of time throughout our life. And if we're being completely honest, we tend to like them more than some of our human family members.
True.
So definitely giving yourself space and being able to honor that relationship that you had with that family member.
I think that that's a great point. I also think that it speaks to the fact that pets really accept us as we are and love us as we are, as opposed to being critical of what we're not.
Right.
So it's such a valuable relationship. And I've also had a lot of clients tell me that they're surprised by the number of people that may just say, we'll go out and get another pet, or they haven't been through that type of grief and don't necessarily understand it.
Yes, absolutely. I tell people all the time, lean into those supports that understand it and maybe try to distance yourself for a bit from those that aren't as supportive, because if you haven't been through it, you don't truly understand what it's like.
Of the time that you spend working with our associates in the hospital, what kinds of things do you do to support associates?
It varies based on what the associates are looking for. We could probably, as the group of social workers here, write an encyclopedia of all the different things that individuals come to us for support. It's you can never guess what it is. A lot of it is professional support, whether that's a difficult case, maybe a moral dilemma that they're facing. A lot of times it's trying to understand the client's perspective and understanding that likely there's a communication error, that they did not mean to wait this long for their pet to come in for euthanasia or for that treatment, that there's other barriers in place. So being able to bridge that and support our associates and understanding everybody's perspective that they're working with. A lot of times it is personal factors that we are human, we come to work, and sometimes we can't fully separate ourselves from concerns that we're having with our family, with our children, with their schooling. So being able to support them and provide resources to make sure that they have everything that they need in their personal life too.
Can you speak a little bit more about what are the offerings that we have for associate well-being?
So there's a few different ones, and it's ever growing because obviously as the needs arise, we're reassessing all of that. The primary one that I educate most of my associates on is LIRA. Mm-hmm. That is the mental health support. So whether you're looking for a therapist, so that's a clinically certified therapist, you have 12 free sessions throughout the calendar year to utilize. Mm-hmm. It also has coaching support. So if you're not looking for an individual clinical therapist, you can have that coaching support because, like I said, we're human, we're all going through things. And to have that third party that's unbiased supporting us is an amazing resource. And to note that it's doesn't cost our employees anything to register for this. I think everybody can utilize it and benefit from it. Then our other one is the Headspace app, which I know a lot of our technicians here utilize, whether that's for insomnia that they're having in the middle of the night, if they need to just get motivated for a workout. So it's the mindfulness app, and you're able to use it for such a variety of different ways. The one way that I didn't realize it is with humor. So being able to be present in the current moment, if you're laughing and genuinely laughing, you're not thinking about the past, you're not thinking about the future, you're there. And a lot of our associates use it, like I said, to be able to sleep at night. I encourage them, put that on like a 1 minute video as you're walking into work, as you're leaving work, to kind of set up those boundaries and make sure that you're transitioning into your personal life and into work.
You know, that's even more important in our 24-hour hospitals, that 24-hour aspect of care and the shift work. Insomnia is much more common in people working second and third shift, and those resources seem like they would be even more important in that type of a hospital setting.
Yes, absolutely. And I think insomnia impacts a variety of people. And definitely, like you said, with the shift work, it's hard for us to reset ourselves. Like our interns, when they're shifting from night ER to day ER to internal medicine, being able to have something that consistently keeps them in line and being able to maintain that sleep is very helpful.
I'm so glad you mentioned interns. How are you involved in intern support at Aurora?
So our intern program is quite large here. We had last year, I believe, 8 interns. And this year we have 3, almost 4, with our mentees starting this week. So it's nice to be able to meet with them. Typically after rounds, I meet with them about twice a month, whether that's for wellness rounds. So making sure that we're doing something that's reflecting on how they're emotionally feeling, their coping skills, and basically anything that they're dealing with in that moment. I can have a schedule, and like most of social work, if they come in and say, we need to deal with X, Y, or Z today, that schedule goes out the window and we're focusing on whatever they need in that moment. And in addition to that, I do communication rounds with them once a month. So being able to focus on those skills that a lot of them did not have time to practice during schooling. And it's a pressure point for a lot of our interns being able, especially after COVID, if they didn't have those interactions as much as other clinicians in the past, to be able to focus on that. Typically, I don't know if you can speak to this, Dr. Curl, but you enter veterinary field, veterinary medicine, in order to work with the animals, and then to be faced with the clients that bring those animals. It's just a different dynamic that the passion doesn't typically lie with the humans.
Yeah, I actually have a great photo. I once had a resident who wanted the dog to come in with their credit card and not attached to the owner.
I've heard that.
And invariably, somebody then taped a credit card to the edge of the e-collar, and the dog came into the ICU with that. It is a standing joke, and I think that our natural, as veterinarians, our natural comfort point is working with animals, and that is what drew a lot of us into the profession. And learning to work with clients and all of the wonderful mix of communication styles that people have and the emotional responses, which the outward response that you're seeing may have nothing to do with the inward response that the person is feeling. It took me a little while as a new veterinarian to get that point, and cultural and religious differences. So how do you work with helping your interns understand how to work with the two-legged animals that are coming in?
Yes. So obviously, like you said, it's a very different dynamic, and typically you're not as used to that or as comfortable with that, which is completely fine, because that is not what your degree is. That's what I'm here for, to work with the humans.
And thank goodness.
It has been useful. So we walk through typically with the interns, and it's what's worked best is having them bring up a case that's either gone really well or hasn't gone as well as they had anticipated it to go. And break it down into step by step. How did they introduce themselves in the room? Were they wearing their name badge to assert that they are the physician walking in? Because there is a lot of different individuals that come in and out of the building, and if you're not used to that, it can be confusing. And in addition to that, it's nice to have the other interns present in this group setting, because a lot of times they help each other. So what has worked well for them, giving them that support and the peer-to-peer encouragement has worked very well too. There's obviously some presentations on communication skills, like you said, nonverbal versus verbal, but I like to make it more interactive and keep their attention for a bit longer. Also, the concept of having doctor in front of their name, that's a weird feeling for them too, that being able to introduce themselves as doctor, and you're taking on that title in a very real sense that they've never had to experience before. So that's one of my favorite parts, is seeing them in the beginning. They don't want to be called doctor. And by the end, like, they just call each other by the last name. It's a wonderful progression to see.
It is a wonderful progression. My other favorite part of that training is that it's a year-long program, and there's generally a two-week overlap time of the interns who are just finishing and the ones who are coming in. And it is such a light bulb moment when they realize that only a year before they were at that very beginning point, and how far they've come and grown during that time period.
Yes. I try to meet with the last class before the new class comes, just to ask them what was helpful as I was here throughout this year. What do you think could be changed to support the interns overall? How was this process for you? And being able to continuously improve the program and what I'm doing to support them, I think, is vital as we go along.
So what's been the biggest surprise that you've learned since joining BCA?
I think I'm going to circle back to that empathy and compassion aspect. Like I said, it's just completely different from what I've experienced in social work prior to this, especially with the title doctor. I've never seen another doctor, like, literally, you sit on the floor with these animals, and it doesn't matter if they're defecating or urinating. Like, you are in that moment with them. They're not stepping out for the nurse. They're not walking away. I think having that level of compassion for everybody involved is just astounding from my experiences.
How would you share that information with clients that are out there? Because I often think that those moments that happen, especially with critical illness and that level of caring and compassion, when clients are typically not back in the ER or ICU with their patients, what would you want clients to know about those times?
I think letting the clients know that everybody in our hospital that's caring for their animals are there for the same reason that they are, that we love what they love. We want to make sure mm-hmm. that their loved ones are being well taken care of. And in addition to that, that we're all human, that things do happen and sometimes events that are unexpected come up, and being able to work through those together and support one another. And like you said, those emotions can come across quite differently than what the client is actually feeling internally. So anger is usually an emotion that's a safer emotion socially to express, but inside they're experiencing a great deal of distress and anxiety and fear and grief, and processing through all of that, it's that umbrella emotion that is more comfortable. So being able to bridge that between our associates and with our clients, and making sure our clients know that we are 100% here to support them through everything from start to finish.
You know, I've never heard of anger referred to as an umbrella emotion. And I love that expression, because that was actually one of the hardest things for me to get used to as a young veterinarian, of dealing with that response and then learning what's underneath it. How do you coach veterinarians and technicians to get past that initial, whatever their fight, flight, or freeze response is? How do you get over that as a veterinarian or technician?
Yeah, definitely taking the time to honor the emotions that you're experiencing in that moment, and making sure that they are very aware of how they're physically presenting themselves too. Sometimes we don't realize when the client is getting overly emotional, I will say, that maybe you're crossing your arms, or you're standing in front of the door. So being very aware of how you're nonverbally communicating with that client in that moment. And then once you're able to step away from that moment, taking a moment for yourself, whether that's walking to get a cup of water, stepping down the hallway, stepping outside to take a deep breath, and being able to process that, even if it's just for a moment, because it is a lot. And I don't think we always give ourselves a moment to go through those emotions.
Hannah, when you and I spoke earlier, one of the interesting aspects of your work was the work that you're doing with your oncology clients. Tell me a little bit about how that part of your job is going.
So initially, when I first started here, I was told that our medical oncology department was thrilled to have a social worker coming, which definitely helped the situation of me easing my way into that department. So we have a pretty large department here with 4 medical oncologists.
Right.
They are very in tune with the emotional need for supporting our clients from start to the finish of treatments. So typically they do put my brochures in every single new consult's paperwork. I am invited typically into any consult that is having a client that has more emotional needs than what they can provide support for. So I think it's essential to start that relationship with our clients from day one to make sure that they know that the support is available, not only for their animal, but obviously for them as well as you're going through this journey. Because obviously they're very dedicated to their pets, as we are. We want to make sure that they have the soundest support system that they possibly can in every aspect of their life.
Yeah, that's a great point. And working with veterinary oncology, my initial impression as an outsider when I was in my training was that it would all be depressing and doom and gloom. And I was actually really happy working on oncology because of the number of things that can be done to give pets great quality of life for longer than they would be otherwise without treatment. Tell me a little bit about the future of the social work program in VCA, given that having an on-site social worker in every single hospital is probably not going to be realistic. How do we expand support to help more of our hospitals to know how to work through and respond to difficult situations?
Of course. In a fairy tale, we would have every single hospital and clinic have a social worker present, but that is not realistic. So being realistic with that answer, I believe that we are hoping to make sure the psychoeducation to support every associate within VCA is provided to them in a way that's the most meaningful for them and the most accessible for them. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I would hope maybe perhaps on a regional level, we'd be able to provide more in-depth support, whether that's to the individuals that are supporting our associates within the hospital to make sure that they're aware of different signs and cues to support our associates if they are struggling or if they need support, and how to access those resources that are so valuable.
Give me some words of wisdom for other social workers who might be interested in getting into the veterinary medicine space. How do they find opportunities?
So I think flexibility is the biggest skill that I think translates well throughout social work. We are basically made to be flexible no matter what situation or occupation that we are a part of. And I think that is no different in veterinary medicine. Obviously, I did not know coming into veterinary medicine that I would be holding animals as they're being euthanized, or carrying the bodies to the freezer, or taking them out of the freezer, or as simple as folding towels to make sure that technician is able to run to that stat and has all the towels put together. So being open to supporting teams in veterinary medicine, whatever way that they need that support in that moment. And it might not be emotional in that moment, but taking that burden off of them so they're able to do what they can do. Obviously, I'm not going to be running anesthesia, but if I can help them prepare for something that lightens their load, is absolutely a plus for them. So flexibility, 100%. And the aspect, I think, and I hope that as the future of veterinary medicine continues to evolve, that more companies will open their doors to social workers and be able to support their clients and associates and make it more of the norm and not an anomaly to see a social worker floating throughout our hospitals.
So Hannah, tell me about what brings you joy with what you're doing right now and being involved in veterinary medicine as a social worker.
So obviously, one of the big impacts that social workers don't typically get in their day-to-day work is being surrounded by the animals. Mm-hmm. Like you had said, being able to be licked on the face by cute puppies or little kittens that are coming in.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen in a human hospital.
No. But absolutely, here the animals are a plus. But I think overall, being able to be in the trenches with our associates is what gives me the most joy. To be on the floor with our clients as they are going through one of the hardest days of their life, I think that's what gives me the most fulfillment and joy. And I'm honored to be a part of everybody's day here and be able to know what they go through and support them along their journey.
I am so passionate about this project, and having worked in hospitals with social workers previously in my career, I know firsthand the value that this brings to our associates and our clients and our patients to have you there. So thank you so much for your time and for letting me speak with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Curl. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak about social work within veterinary medicine. And thank you for all the work you're doing to highlight this.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. Don't forget to leave a review to let us know your thoughts and share the episode with friends. Follow VCA Animal Hospitals on social media at LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more inspiring stories, visit our website at vcavoice.com.